Our Bible reading this morning is Matthew chapter 24, and it's verses 36 to the end, 51. But about that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark, and they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in a field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And then he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. God will bless the public reading of his word.
So we're looking at these words of Jesus in these two chapters, Matthew 24 and 25. Jesus teaching his disciples just before he would go to the cross and die and rise again. He's teaching them about what will happen at the end of time when he will return. And last week we said the time is short. And some cheeky person in our congregation texted me and said, is your watch battery flat? Well, I said the title of this week is Watch. So if that was you, watch out. This week the title is Watch. Last week the time is short. We said revival is coming. We believe that Jesus will one day return. But what Jesus teaches is that before that there will be a shaking. Jesus describes it like labor pains that will come and they will intensify and they will become more frequent. And that Jesus tells us these things for a few reasons. Firstly, to remind us that he is still in control. That when we see these things taking place that may seem out of control, that may seem like awful things in our world, to remind us that God is still in control. He also tells us these things so that we will not be discouraged when we see the world seemingly getting worse. We won't be discouraged, for we know there is a God in heaven who sent his Son for us. And thirdly, to be a pointer, a reminder that he will come again. If you've traveled anywhere in a car with children, you know, they always ask the question, are we nearly there yet? And so you have to find as many distractions as you can for your children on journeys. And up until a couple of years ago, we used to regularly go to North Wales to Cricieth. A member of our family had a little holiday place there and said we could use it, which was so kind. Selfishly, they've gone and sold it. But we used to go regularly. And when you go somewhere that's the same place on holiday, you have landmarks on your journey, don't you? And when you get to certain landmarks, you see these things. And you're reminded of the destination you're headed to. And you begin to forget about the worries of day to day because as you see these things, as you get closer, you know that your destination is drawing nearer. And the journey was about 2.5 hours, and so we used to have a little competition by the end of the journey. First one to see Cricieth Castle wins. No prize, it's just for fun. If you've ever been to Cricieth, you'll know there's not much of a castle there. So you can't see it until the last minute, but it kept them quiet for the last half hour of the journey. And so we would get there and we would come down. The first person to see the castle, we knew we were at our destination. And this is what Jesus has been saying to his disciples here, that as you watch, as you see the things taking place in the world, you will begin to know that the heavenly destination is coming closer. Just a few verses before what Joe read from verse 32, Jesus said, now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. When we saw the castle in the kind of in front of us in the car, we knew that we were nearly at our destination. And Jesus says that when we see these signs in nature, the changes in the trees, the different color of the sunsets and the sunrises, as we see these things that he's spoken of earlier in Matthew 24 that we looked at last week, as we see these things, so we know that God is on the move, that he is at the door. In Revelation 3 verse 20, Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Whoever opens the door, I will come in and eat with them, and they with me." And you know, this is a really important thing for us, because the teaching of Jesus that we will see in these chapters is that at the end of all time, there will be a great separation of those who know God and those who don't know God. And Jesus says, "I stand at the door and knock." Have you opened the door of your heart and invited Jesus in? This is a crucial thing. So the first thing for us today, the day is coming soon, but we don't know when it will be. Verse 34, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened." And some of what Jesus spoke of in these chapters were for the literal generation that was standing listening to Jesus. When Jesus said in verse 2 about one stone of the temple not being left on another, he was speaking of the fall of the Jerusalem temple that happened in AD 70. He speaks of Roman occupation, of the persecution of Christians in the earliest church that we read of in the book of Acts and the letters that we read of in early church history. And so some of what Jesus was saying was for that literal generation, so that when they saw those things happening, they were reminded that Jesus would come again. But Jesus is also speaking to the generation that is you and I. Because we know that at the death and resurrection of Jesus, one generation finished and another began. The Old Testament and the New Testament, God's chosen people of Israel, and the New Testament people of God in Jesus Christ. We are that generation of those who are followers of Jesus. From the first person to believe in Jesus at his resurrection to those of us here today, we are this generation. And every generation in history has at some point taken hold of what Jesus says here and taken time to pray and to seek his face. And we could argue that the signs are there now. The wars and the rumors of wars, the things that we see taking place in the world. Yet there have always been these things as well. But here's just a few things. These are things that just I've noticed. I'm not saying this is, you know, a prophetic thing. These are just things that I've noticed recently that make me think we're in significant times. I've noticed this. I've noticed a move among Christians of different church traditions to pray significantly now and to pray for revival. A move across all different denominations I've seen for that. I've noticed a greater fervency for prayer specifically for the nation, for this nation, for a move of God to take place. I've noticed a move among parachurch, you know, organizations that support churches, a move to work together to pray specifically for revival of God in this nation. Different organizations that have done things separately for years, working together, all with the same heart. I've noticed a convergence of what was once different traditions in churches coming together. The one I see most, which I think is hugely exciting, is the charismatic and the contemplative coming together to say the same thing. How exciting is that? The stream of the church that says we believe in the move and the miracles and the power of God now. And the move of the church that says we believe in it in the depth of God and the quietness to learn to hear his voice. When we learn to hear his voice and we see the signs and wonders, that's a powerful thing. I see these things coming together. You know, as I speak with other church leaders around the city and around the area, I see boundaries being broken down. I see unity on the rise. I see churches working together across denomination. I see apostolic leaders bringing prophetic words to the church and the movements in the churches in this land. And I believe there's a place of blessing here. Psalm 133 says that the place of unity there is where God will command a blessing. Jesus said in John 17, this was a prayer between Jesus and his Father, but for his disciples, those who believe in him. John 17, 22, "I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and I have loved them even as you have loved me." Why mention these things? Well, because as Jesus says, when you see the fig tree, when we see the change in seasons, when we see the color of the sky at night, red sky at night, whatever it is, all that kind of stuff, as you see these things and you know that something's happening in the world, so when you see these things that Jesus speaks of, we know that a move of God is coming. And so what are we to do? Verse 42, Jesus says, therefore keep watch. Keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. And what Jesus interweaves through these chapters is the same messages kind of cycled together. He says, I will return. Some things are going to happen in the world, and so you need to watch and be prepared, for I will return. And so you need to watch and be prepared, for I will return, and then there'll be a great separation at the end of all time. And in verses 36 to 39, Jesus emphasizes this. But about that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken and the other left. Jesus' reference to Noah here is about being prepared. If you remember from Genesis chapter 6, Noah lived in an age when we're told that all of the society, all of the world around him were unrighteous. They were living in a way that was not honoring to God. They were still going through life, eating, drinking, marrying, going on doing the things of their own lifestyle, but worshipping idols, not following God, not honoring God in the way that they lived. They knew nothing of what was to come, despite Noah bringing God's warnings to them. And then all of a sudden, the flood, symbolic of judgment, came upon them, and only eight people, Noah and his family, survived through that. The quote from Martin Lloyd-Jones last week spoke of the same thing, didn't it? But we live in a generation where people are seemingly unaware. They're just going about life unaware of God in heaven and that God will come again. Noah was living in that time of unrighteousness, but Genesis 6 verse 9 contrasts this and says, but Noah was a righteous man. He was ready before God. He was listening to what God was saying. He was living in a God-honoring way. And is that the way that God will find you and I when he returns? Are we living in a God-honoring way in this time that we live in? Verse 42, therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come an hour when you do not expect him. The readiness that Jesus speaks of here, of being ready, is about a readiness before God. Like Noah, living a righteous life, aware of God and open to what God will do. But what we know is that as humanity, helpful what Aaron shared this morning with the children, none of us are righteous. Ecclesiastes 7 verse 20 says, indeed, there is no one on earth who is righteous, no one who does what is right and never sins. Romans chapter 3 verse 10 onwards says, there is no one righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands. There is no one who seeks God. All have turned away. They have together become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways, and the way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes. That's not one that we tweet in the morning, is it, that verse? But Romans 3 verse 22 tells us this. This righteousness is given through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. No one is righteous, but we receive righteousness before God because of Jesus Christ. How did that happen? Because at the cross, a great exchange happened. Jesus, who lived a perfect, righteous life, took upon himself all of our wrongdoing, our unrighteousness, to use that word from the Bible. And he gave us his righteousness, his holiness. It's a free gift that is available to every single one of us. Without him, none of us are righteous. But he took our mess upon himself and gave us his holiness. It was a great exchange. And we're told here that it's through faith. And so what does it mean to be ready? It means to have faith in Jesus Christ. That's what it means to be righteous, to be saved, to be listening to God's instructions, to be ready in faith. But those who are not ready who are not aware or not bothered. We find ourselves side by side by them, and a separation will take place. Jesus says two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken, one will be left. Two people will be sat in a coffee shop, one will be drinking a latte, one a cappuccino, one will be taken, one will be left. One person will be gaming, the other person will be reading, one will be taken, the other will be left. Jesus speaks of a reality at the end of time that there will be a judgment, a separation of those who know him and those who do not. Therefore, Jesus says, keep watch, be alert. The literal, the Greek says, keep awake, not meaning don't sleep, we need sleep, but to be spiritually ready, for at any time he will return at a moment when we do not expect him to. And we'll see in the next few weeks that Jesus unpacks that through three parables in Matthew chapter 25, where he looks at the separation of the lost and the saved and the importance of those who are saved to be watchful, to be ready. And that's what we're going to have a think through today. Jesus said in this mini parable here, but understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. The key thing that Jesus is saying in that very short parable, it's the element of surprise. A thief comes when nobody is expecting him to. Now, Jesus isn't a thief. He's not going to steal into your life. You have to invite him into your life. But the owner had fallen asleep. And I wonder if the church in this nation has fallen asleep. Has the strategy of the devil not been to tempt us into the things that we label as great sins? Because they're fairly obvious. Has the strategy of the devil simply been to put the church to sleep? You know, through COVID, we couldn't gather together physically. But the church has come back stronger. So maybe the tactic of the devil now is to put the church to sleep. You've been away for so long during COVID. Now that you're back together again, huddle in close together and pull the blanket over yourselves. Keep warm and keep cozy. Don't worry about the people out there. Here's a few doctrinal things that you might want to debate in the church, whether you think that's right or wrong, blah, 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 blah. Forget about the people out there. Just rest and sleep. Get cozy and comfortable. Has the devil been lulling the church to sleep? He knows that the big sins are too obvious, as we would label them. So maybe he just wants to let the church fall asleep and forget that we're called to some things altogether, that we are called to go and share the good news of Jesus Christ. And what Jesus is saying through these verses is it's time to wake up, because he'll return at a moment when no one is expecting him to, at a time when we least expect it. So watch, for we don't know when it will be, and keep watching, because it will be at the moment when we least expect it. We see the fig tree, we see the signs of the times, and so now we must get ready. And Jesus continues to talk about this in this next mini parable, story with a heavenly meaning that he shares in verse 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. There's two things Jesus is pointing to in this little parable that he tells here. I think the first one is about being prepared, being holy specifically. I'm not just talking about personal holiness here. I'm talking about holiness to the gospel, standing firm on the truth of Jesus in the belief that he will return. And secondly, it's about action. Firstly, being prepared, staying true to the gospel of Jesus Christ. In 1944, the Soviet Red Army invaded Romania and put a communist government in charge of that land. And one of the things that took place that year was the communist government gathered a load of Christian ministers together in a big Congress meeting. And by force, they got these different ministers and elders and bishops and priests and whoever else to come up to the podium and to speak from that podium, broadcast to the nation that the aims of communism and Christianity would go hand in hand, and to celebrate what that government was doing and do so with their Christian faith, stood there. In that room was a man named Richard Wurmbrand and his wife Sabina. He's a Lutheran and Anglican minister, and he wrote this in his book about that particular occasion. He said, my wife and I were present at this congress. Sabina told me, Richard, stand up and wash away this shame from the face of Christ. They are spitting in his face. I said to her, if I do so, you will lose your husband. She replied, I do not wish to have a coward as a husband. Ouch. Then I arose and spoke to this congress, praising not the murderers of Christians, but Jesus Christ, stating that our loyalty is due to him first. And the speeches at this congress were broadcast, and the whole country could hear proclaimed from the rostrum of the Communist Parliament the message of Christ. Afterward, I had to pay for this, but it was worthwhile. He was tortured for many years for that moment. And I want to ask you, are you prepared to be holy to the gospel in this land? Are you prepared to make a stand for Jesus Christ in our nation today? Are you prepared to make a stand for him before he returns, even when society seems to shun Christianity? Will you make a stand for Jesus today? As we saw from what Jesus said in verses 9 to 13 last week, when the moments become tough, stand firm. Maybe one of the ways that the enemy has lulled the church to sleep is to not speak out about Jesus. Maybe it's to help us to forget the urgency that Christ will return. Just what Jesus says in this parable. What he says is that the wicked servant says, my master's staying away a long time. You know, we could say, well, Jesus hasn't returned for 2,000 years. You know, he doesn't seem to be intervening in some of the way that people are living their lives. It seems that he's not doing anything about some of these things, so we may as well just join in. But no, Jesus will return, and we need to stay true to the gospel of Jesus. We need to beware not to fall into the lie of the world's lifestyle being okay, because God doesn't seem to be in a rush to deal with it. He sees and he knows and he will come again. This mini parable that Jesus says is that the owner will return. And how will he find you? How will he find you? And then the second thing that's key in this is it's about being in the field. Jesus has spoken about being alert, keeping watch, and the point about the thief illustrates that. But what this little parable suggests is that it's not about sitting afar with binoculars looking out into the world. It's about being in the world. I went to an all-boys school, apart from sixth form. There was girls in sixth form. I went to an all-boys school, and that meant naturally we misbehaved awfully, particularly when there was a supply teacher. When the teacher went out of the room, the whole class was carnage, apart from the one person whose job was to stand at the door and keep an eye out. And if the teacher or the head teacher was going to shout, it's coming, and allow everybody else to either carry on or go back to what they were doing. What Jesus is saying in this parable is not that. That we are not called to be those that occasionally stand at the door of the church and shout, he's coming, and then hide back under our blanket. Jesus talks about us being in the field, in the classroom. Verse 46, it will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. And the readiness of the good servant here is not that they're sitting watching. It's not that they're shouting out into the world that he's going to come again, but then staying hidden behind closed doors. It's that they're working in the field. Jean's word that she brought in the worship earlier from the Lord about what are you doing with what I've given you, I think that's the right word. I think we need to take note of what Jean said there, because that's exactly what this verse is about. What are the gifts that God has given you? What are you doing with the good news that Jesus died and rose again to save you and to save all who believe in him? Will he find you out in the field? We're all called to three things, all of us, aren't we? The first, we're called to love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Secondly, we're called to love our neighbor as ourselves. Thirdly, we are all called to go and make disciples. But then how that looks in our own daily life will be different depending on your age, your state of life, your health, the gifting that you have, whatever God has called you to do. What is God calling you to do right now? What is the field that God has placed you in, and what are you doing with that message of the gospel that he has given you? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. The book of Jude, chapter 20, verses 22 and 23, makes it clear. Be merciful to those who doubt. Save others by snatching them from the fire. To others show mercy mixed with fear, hating even the clothing stained by corrupted flesh. Because the day is coming when Jesus will return. It will be at a moment when we don't expect it. And so we need to watch. We need to be aware of what's happening in the world around us. And we need to be praying. But also we need to stay true and holy to the gospel, to make a stand for the gospel of Jesus in this day and age. And we need to do so not from the doorway shouting out to the world, but by being in the field, serving, loving, proclaiming the good news of Jesus in the things we do and the things we say, using the gifts that God has given us in order to do that. Because one day, he will come again. How will he find you when he returns? Father, would you send your Spirit to shake us and awaken us to the call on our lives to know you and love you, to love our neighbors, and to make disciples. Lord, in this moment of quiet, as we ponder the day of your return, show us the field that you're calling us to serve you in, of how we can be used in the gifts you've given us right now, in the places you've given us. Lord, show us, for we are open to you.